Welcome to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, leading the business conversation right here on SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. According to the World Federation of Exchanges, the latest value in terms of market capitalization of the global equity markets as of 2025 was $151.94 trillion. That's 18.5% higher than what it was in 2024. Global equity markets certainly are worth a tidy sum. I'm Jimmy Moyaha. This is the SAFM Market Update. Let's get you up to date. Coming up on the show today, we take a look at the latest full year results by Blue Label Unlimited Group. They released their results today for their financial year. We're going to reflect on that with co-CEO Mark Levy and get a sense of how their business has been faring. Then we also take a look at the latest developments around the Ephora investment. This is an energy investment that the Public Investment Corporation had put in around 760 million rands into at one stage. That business currently facing a court application for liquidation, rather, and we're going to take a look at that and potentially see if we can make sense of some of the implications that could arise from there. Then we speak to the Ombud Council around the Money Smart Week taking place currently this week. We get a sense of what it is that week is all about and what sort of financial education needs to be done from that perspective. Then we have a conversation with Alan Gray's Jeff Chikudo around how it is that they manage risk in times of bullish markets. Markets are on the up at the moment, and we're going to take a look at how it is that long-term asset managers manage their risk in these times. We close off the show with an executive lounge conversation, as we do every Wednesday. We take a look at the life of Mebusisiwe Memela Kambula beyond her day-to-day responsibilities as the board member for the International Women's Forum of South Africa. So we get a sense of what it is that she gets up to and what it is that she enjoys doing.
The day's markets. Clear insights on today's winners, losers, and what to do next.
As always, that's where we kick off the show, with a sense of market movements that have been happening throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Otto1890's David Shapiro to take a look at markets and see if we can make sense of them. Uncle David, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. No, we're back at 15 Rand 98. We're at 15 Rand 93 when I passed the SASFIN offices a little earlier today, and I was quite happy to see that level. The Rand fighting fit, there's a lot that is going on at the moment against the US dollar, but it is very lovely to see the Rand below 16 Rand.
I think we're going to keep seeing it. I don't think the dollar weakness is over yet. I still think there are a lot of issues that America have to handle. There's still a lot of concern about the budget, you know, about Trump's budget, his big, beautiful budget. It's not going the way he thought it would go, in the sense that, you know, he gave tax cuts as well and was hoping to recover the money with tariffs. And everything's gone the wrong way. The Iranian war has unsettled it. Inflation still remains high because of oil price. So he's battling on all fronts. He's really a very difficult situation. And I think Scott Bessent, who's the Treasury Secretary, equivalent to the Minister of Finance, his actions to try and buy bonds off the market, long bonds off the market, I think it's an act of desperation. They're very, very worried about rates going up. So I think as long as this uncertainty continues and the question marks about Trump's administration and the economy, I think, you know, dollar will go under pressure and Rand will continue. And, you know, I've seen reports now saying buy the Rand, buy the Brazilian real, you know, by emerging market currencies and that. So that's another action that's going to, you know, keep the Rand fairly strong. So I'm not sure that, you know, we've seen the best level of the Rand yet. It still can get better, meaning, you know, down to the 1550s or thereabouts.
Uncle David, that Rand strength as well is something that we are looking forward to, because from an inflation point of view and how it is that our central bank takes a look at its interest rate decisions, the strength of the Rand bodes in the favor of South Africans,
yeah.
Because we often then don't see those interest rate hikes. I want to get your thoughts around how it is that monetary policies are starting to kind of shift as well, particularly as you mentioned, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, and we spoke about that last week, in the U.S. Treasury's decision rather to repurchase some long-dated bonds from their perspective. The markets are clearly shifting and adjusting to this Trump administration and the global factors. And that adjustment is presenting new opportunities for once. At some point, you and I were very stressed about the markets, but it seems like we're finally making heads or tails of where we're going.
Well, the markets are still strong. The U.S. economy is still very robust. They came out with numbers today. So why the markets are a little unsettled is that there was a view that if inflation comes down and the economic data is weak, Kevin Warsh, who's speaking at Jackson Hole on Friday, might be inclined to hold off raising rates and actually start to bring down rates. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So, you know, you've got all these cross currents at the happening. The one area, I think I say this each week, there are two different markets. The equity market in the U.S. is still pretty steady. We're waiting for NVIDIA's numbers to come out today. It's always a big event. Jimmy, you know what they're expecting? Sales of 91. This is quarterly, hey? $91 billion, okay? So when you translate that into Rand, even at 16, it's 1.5 trillion Rand a quarter. That's the size of this business, and it's very important to the success of AI. So you've still got that strong force which is holding up equity markets. But when we get to the debt markets, which has its own personality and its own culture and following, that's where the dollar weakness is coming in. But on the equity side, it's pretty strong. So, you know, you've got to try to put all these factors together. But there's no line that joins all of these. It's all over the place.
Uncle David, the reason I brought in the central bank's decisions was because Jackson Hole, Hole Symposium takes place this week. We know it's an annual event. It is basically the World Cup final for Federal Reserves and banking institutions. And I want to get your thoughts around what then becomes the focal point this year, because this is the first Jackson Hole since the Middle East tensions began. They kicked off only at the start of this year, more officially. So last year's theme and mindset and mentality coming into 2026 has completely been shattered by the developments out of the Middle East. What then becomes the focal point of this year's symposium?
Well, look, it's always an academic gathering. It's a kind of gathering you'll fall asleep within a few minutes of someone presenting a paper. You know, it's one of those kind of meetings where we shouldn't be invited or shouldn't even be there, you know, but I think the focal point is the keynote speech on Friday, which is Kevin Warsh, and it's his first one. And everybody's waiting for some kind of direction to work out where he's taking monetary policy. You know, in other words, where he's going to take interest rates. Is he going to raise? Is he going to attack inflation aggressively? At the moment, he's hedging. You know, he's hedging, look, I've got to look at the data. I need to do it. I need to have a better understanding. That's not necessarily bearish or dovish. I mean, dovish or hawkish. No one really understands him at the moment. So we're hoping that at this meeting, we get a little more clarity about where rates are going. I'm sure Letecha will be there. You know, he's a great academic himself. But, you know, from our point of view, from South Africa's point of view, you did right. If the rand continues to improve, you saw we haven't raised rates yet. We're hoping, and things are stabilizing, steadying. We're hoping that this will help us on inflation. We need it because, Jimmy, if you go through the numbers, if you go through all the results, there's a lot of pressure. You know, I know that you're going to cover some results tonight, and you always do. But I mean, if you go through them on a day-to-day basis, companies here are battling in an economy that's not giving them any help. And we see immense weakness in the retail sector. You know, shares just keep falling. So this is an economy that we need something to be done. We need as much stimulus or as much that we can get, you know, in order to get spending up, to get growth up.
Markets certainly needing the best outcomes at the moment and still remaining resilient in spite of some of the challenges that they find themselves confronted with. We'll have to leave the conversation on that note. Thank you, as always, to Otto1890's David Shapiro for joining us to take a look at markets, the Jackson Hole Symposium taking place later this week, and how that could potentially influence the market sentiment.
With a complete view of your finances, Nedbank Private brings every aspect of your financial life together to create solutions tailored to your evolving needs. From private banking and lending to long-term financial planning and wealth management, Nedbank Private supports you at every stage of your financial journey. While others see only part of you, we see all of you. See money differently. Nedbank Private. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Bullish markets often attract investors just as the risk of overpaying begins to rise. This evening at 6:45, Jeff Chikudo, Senior Manager in the Institutional Clients Team at Allan Gray, joins the SFM Market Update to discuss how investors should think about risk in buoyant times and why valuation discipline remains critical when optimism runs high. Brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized FSP.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
Blue Label Unlimited Group released their annual results for the financial year ended 31 May 2026. This is, of course, the company that was formerly the parent company of CellC until the recent unbundling and separate listing of CellC. We're going to take a look at the Blue Label Telecoms numbers, the CellC numbers having some bearing on the performance of the group. I'm joined on the line by the co-CEO of Blue Label, Mark Levy, to take a look at the numbers and see what to make of it. Mark, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with an overview of the year that was business strong from a revenue perspective, just shy of that 10 billion rand mark in terms of revenues. EBITDA just shy of that billion rand mark as well. There's a final dividend that we'll get into. Overall, from a business perspective, how did you feel the year went?
Yeah, you know, we're pretty proud of the year. It was hard. It was good. If you look at, you know, the 9.4 billion, if you impute it, because we only, you know, account for the, as an agent, not as a principal, but if you look at our revenue, it was closer to 100 billion rand for the year. So really proud in terms of driving revenue, driving growth. Our product categories across the board grew. Our different game plans in the energy world, in the data world grew. And yeah, we had some headwinds. We had the March of the Marches, which caused some, you know, some headwinds across the industry. But all in all, as a management team, very proud of our group. We, you know, listed Celsius in late November last year, where most a few years ago wouldn't have given Celsius a fighting chance. So yeah, a lot more to be proud of. Not to say there weren't some issues, but a lot more wins and losses.
Mark, let's take a look at that CellC business in a bit more detail, because that's been with the Blue Label business for quite some time, all the way from when you initially purchased the business. At some stage, you wrote it down to zero on your own balance sheet. This particular financial year, from a Blue Label Telecoms perspective, the restructuring has cost the business at least 5 billion rand. I want to get your thoughts around that CellC business, the loss it's contributed to your overall business, and kind of where we find ourselves now that the separation has happened and the listing has happened. I caught up with George earlier in the week to discuss the CellC results. They're happy on that side. And obviously, from a Blue Label perspective, you do still maintain an interest in that business even after the listing.
Yeah. So let's try to break it down a little bit. First of all, you know, kudos to George and his management team, a real great, solid team there. And that's why there's so much opportunity and growth in CellC for many years to come with the existing game plan and what they're trying to do. Blue Label obviously valued, you know, devalued the asset because it had no value, then revalued the asset. And we thought we could get the listing off at a higher price. It was a tough market. And when we finally managed to get it off at the 9 billion, it would obviously then cause a different a markdown in our valuation. And hence that paper entry in terms of where, you refer to the 4 billion rand is due to that nature. But we, you know, if you look at the valuation of CellC on the earnings multiples of trades off, it's not even a fraction of where its peers are trading. So lots of growth, lots of scale, what we're looking for is probably what the whole market is looking forward to, is an uncomplicated set of financial results from both Blue Label and Celsius. So for the last many years, it's actually been very, very complicated, and not due to us intentionally. It's these new account, well, the accounting rules of IFRS, and then you've got to normalize things and then take it out as if it wasn't there and add it back as if it was there. And yes, you know, to be fair to the market, it became very, I wouldn't use clumsy, but very complicated. So we're starting to get a set of results where you're actually getting normalized earnings as if we weren't part of Celsius and Celsius weren't part of us. We're just a shareholder. So by February next year, when we're presenting our half-year results, you should factually see a clean set of Celsius results and a clean set of results from Blue Label, which doesn't have all these imputed things. And that's, I think, caused the frustration in the marketplace.
Mark, can we take a look at some of the other aspects of the performance from a Blue Label perspective? Impairments from a business perspective north of the 300 million rand mark, if we're taking into account the goodwill impairment as well as the asset impairments. But alongside that, a little over 130 million rands in losses from disposals. You did, of course, mention at the start of our conversation that some of the factors that have been unfolding throughout the year haven't always been easy. And some of them, like the impairments and accounting adjustments, have to happen, whether it is the business wants them to happen or not, just because we have to follow prudent accounting principles. Take me through some of the other movements that affected your balance sheet and how it is that you've been able to contend with them.
Yeah, you know, I don't think one should read too much in this. You know, as business owners and as running businesses, you're constantly right-sizing your businesses. You're writing off certain things. We sold some assets. You know, we wrote them down. We had some RT capitalizations. So a lot of this is in the normal course of business. We don't foresee it happening in the next period as well. So we had a good opportunity to clean things up quite a lot. Yeah, so we don't foresee them happening, you know, on a perpetual base. These are generally once-offs that we have accounted for in this period.
Mark, let's take a look at something else that happened in this particular period. One of your subsidiaries, Blue Label Energies, managed to secure quite a significant trading license from an energy trading perspective. It's always nice to be able to move ahead with plans like that and to secure those all-important licenses. Take us through the strategy from that particular subsidiary and kind of how that fits into the broader group picture.
Yeah. If you look at Blue Label, it's really what we call an evolution, you know, from becoming a traditional vendor of electronic tokens to actually evolving into how to solve for revenue, bad revenue collections and poor billing. And in saying that, we generate a lot of revenue in the municipality space, you know, 3 to 4 billion rand a month, which allows us security of cash flows in those areas. And hence, it allows us to then look at how can we do funded projects within those environments. And that bore life into a business called Blue Energy, where we're looking at the ability to build smaller energy production or green energy on the municipal grid. But what we're doing for that is we're really looking at an ecosystem play whereby we applied to NERSA, we got a trading license. So as and when the ability to buy and sell electricity comes available, we have the ability to then trade it within the environments in our municipal space or the large power users. We have a wheeling game plan where we're able then to wheel traffic again to our respective municipalities we deal with and to the large power users. And then we have something called a nodal play where we're looking at deploying our own solar environments either on rooftops or on the ground mounted via solar panels and or with batteries. So really quite a cohesive play to complement the existing power providers, the Eskoms of the world, the big RPPs. You know, if you look at the growth in electricity, will double and treble in the coming years because of, you know, AI, data centers and so forth. So they need lots of what we can do. And we're looking just to complement that energy supply going into the future. Lots of opportunity there.
A business that is in the process of simplifying its structures, and that simplification comes with some additional implications for the time being. The underlying fundamentals of the business remain solid. The business remains clear on its strategy and its focus, and we'll see how that strategy plays out into the new financial year. All the best to you, Mark, and the team. Mark Levy, co-CEO of Blue Label Unlimited Group, joining us to reflect on the full year's numbers they presented the market this morning.
Did you know, soil health is about more than nutrients? It's also about the physical, biological, and chemical properties that determine what's happening below the surface. With Omnia's nutriology model, producers get a clear picture of their soil, so every recommendation starts with better insight. Omnia Nutriology. Better farming starts with understanding your soil.
In case you're on the highway, driving to your first big maize delivery, and something mysterious happens. You stop at the garage to scope the damage. You realize the fuel system is kinda dear macar. You panic. But then you take a deep breath. Because you know HinoCare Gap Cover is there to cover anything outside the standard 6-year warranty. From steering columns to ABS control modules, it's the unseen essential in your business. Speak to your Hino dealer. T's and C's apply. Hino. All the way.
We're not just interested in banking businesses. We're interested in building better ones. Because the true value of a bank isn't what it provides. It's what it makes possible. Simpler operations, greater adaptability, long-term resilience. Think bigger. Think NetBank Commercial Banking. See money differently. NetBank. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
There once was a company called Fora, or Sakoil, depending on which name you remember it by, back in 2007, 2008. This was a company that was meant to be the oil play of the Public Investment Corporation and other stakeholders. It was listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange over the years. Since then, between 2011 and 2018 at least, that business had received around 760 odd million rands in financial injections from the Public Investment Corporation as the significant shareholder in that business. Today, the business remains listed on the JSE with its shares suspended for trading and the business, according to its share price, only worth around 19 million rand. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail and seeing what happened to that particular business with the founder and chair of Public Interest South Africa, Teboho Kasi, joins me on the line now to see what we make of this. Teboho, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Quite the story behind this particular entity, which I suppose, given its listing, might not have been considered a state-owned entity. But from your perspective, give us a background around what you remember about this company and why it was initially something that was of interest to the Public Investment Corporation.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy, for having me. You know, you'd recall that this company did a reverse listing on the JSE to actually be listed through acquisition of an existing entity, and the intention was to ensure that it broadens its access to capital as it sought to explore other markets across Africa insofar as the oil energy is concerned. The central problem appears to be an escalation of exposure despite accumulating warning signs, which were ignored. And for us, what really matters is, and the question which I would like to pose is, or maybe self, and I'll probably answer it, is if your investment in a company has already generated sufficient concern to warrant an independent forensic investigation, what changed thereafter to justify committing hundreds of millions of rands more, which is what the board and the management have to answer and really give clear answers and not obfuscate, because there were reports even before Parliament and through Gobodo forensic investigation that pointed to that type of escalation looming, and as well as it continued to happen, and then a lot more and more money was pumped into Fora.
Teboho, as it stands at the moment, Fora is staring down the barrel of an application it is opposing in the Gauteng High Court. That is an application for liquidation. And that suggests, based on that application, that the assets of the business worth around 41 million rands, according to the audited numbers, would need to be sold off, and the creditors would need to be settled. Now, according to the, if we take the JSE share price at the moment and the market cap based on that, the business effectively only worth just under 20 million rand there. A business looking very, very different from the more than 700 million rands that the Public Investment Corporation has injected into it. This a obvious concern and something that the market and the board need to be looking at, the board needing to address this. What do we make of where the business finds itself today? It doesn't seem like there might be a lot to save from a business perspective, but obviously accountability, as you mentioned, still something that's very important.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing is their lives and livelihoods at risk when such an occurrence takes place, such as a company staring down the barrel of a potential liquidation. And the question is, as the company or the board deals with that question, you should be asking yourself, what went wrong? Or should they, could the PIC have done and managed the risk any better than they currently have? The question is obvious. The obvious question, I mean, answer is yes, but we should qualify that. We should remind ourselves or even the listeners that asset managers themselves are paid to take risk. You know, not every investment will succeed, you know, as we all know, and it would be unfair to judge old investments such as in Saf Oil purely or with the benefit of hindsight. You know, oil exploration itself is an expensive business and risky business for that matter. And emerging market energy investments are inherently risky themselves. So the most serious issues is therefore not whether the PIC investment is in a company that eventually failed. It is readily that why the PIC repeatedly increases exposure as a risk factor or indicators accumulated. That is where the distinction between investment risk and governance failures become critical.
Mm. To your point, Teboho, we did reach out to the Public Investment Corporation for comment on this particular matter. They noted, of course, the High Court application and the subsequent confirmation that Ifore intends to oppose this liquidation application. They also said that as a matter of principle, the Public Investment Corporation does not comment on matters that are sub judice. So, unfortunately, from that perspective, the concluding comment is that ultimately the board of Ifore exercises control over the company's affairs and will be best positioned to comment in that. And I think that speaks to your point around the distinction between investment risk and governance risk. From a governance risk perspective, what do we learn from these sorts of developments, especially where it relates to investing public funds?
There are four quick points I'd like to make just on that question alone. First, public investment institutions must distinguish commercial confidentiality from accountability. You know, the PIC cannot be expected to publish every piece of commercially sensitive information while transactions are effective. And that reminds me of what is likely or expected to happen with Eskom, where it must be confined to PFMA rules when it liberalizes, while the rest of its competitors would not be subject to that. But once hundreds of millions of rand of beneficiaries' money appears to have been lost, there must be meaningful retrospective transparency. And the second point I would like to make is accountability must follow the decision, not merely the outcome. You know, a bad outcome from a sound, properly governed investment process is unfortunate. You know, a bad outcome resulting from ignored warnings, as in this case, you know, inadequate due diligence or repeated departures from investment managers is something altogether different. And I think it's a sorry state, and which leads me to the third dimension, which is there must be accountability for follow-on investment decisions, which in this case, it doesn't seem to have been the case. I mean, the initial 75 million rands investment may have been defensible on the information available at the time, but each subsequent 329 rands million or 360 million commitment was a new decision requiring a fresh investment thesis and fresh assessment of risk. And lastly, you know, institutional memory suffers when there's changes. If an earlier transaction had already generated a forensic investigation, as in this case, the Kobota one, those findings should have become part of the risk assessment for every subsequent decision involving that company. You know, if the PIC nevertheless decided to invest further, it should now be capable of explaining why. But like you're saying, they're now playing smoke and mirrors, hide and seek under the sub judice principle.
Some serious questions to be answered and some even more that need to be dealt with by management as to how it is that the business finds itself in the precarious position it is in today. For now, we'll have to leave the conversation on that note, though. Founder and Chair at Public Interest South Africa, Teboho Kas, joining us to take a look at the Ifore investment made by the Public Investment Corporation, where that business stands today and its latest liquidation challenges.
Look, being able to say my partner and I have traveled to 52 countries in 5 years is a great conversation starter. But that's not why I'm at Atlanta Standard Bank Private. is for moments like these. Babe, will you marry me?
Yes!
It's not what you do that matters, but who you do it for. Get up to 50% back in UCount rewards points on domestic and international flights. Search UCount Travel Mall to find out more. Standard Bank. It can be. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This week is officially Money Smart Week South Africa, and the theme for this year is Money Smart, the power of possible. We're going to be taking a look at this important summit that's taking place this week and getting a sense of some of the priorities of this gathering. I'm joined on the line by the head of regulation and oversight at the Ombud Council, Avitha Norfolk, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Avitha, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. What is Money Summit Week South Africa, and why does it matter to South Africans?
Jimmy, Money Smart Week South Africa is actually an initiative that is a flagship initiative of the National Consumer Financial Education Committee, which is really then spearheaded by the National Treasury. It has secretariat support by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. And what it actually ultimately means is that, apart from the fact that Money Smart Week South Africa is held on an annual basis, the idea is to bring together organizations and individuals who do consumer awareness, financial education, and use a platform that is collaborative in nature to let the consumer on the ground understand that from a rights, responsibilities, and recourse perspective, they are not alone. There is a collaborative effort by these organizations and these institutions to guide them along the way so that they can make informed financial decisions that will impact their lives in the years coming. And, you know, from a generational perspective as well, to see to it that their children are able to have financial acumen to be able to then make informed decisions as well.
Avitha, can we take a look at the importance of having financial education in the South African landscape at the moment? I mean, National Treasury, through the National Consumer Financial Education Committee, has been on a concerted drive, and this is part of that drive to ensure that proper financial education is out there. Other partners like the FSCA and the Ombud Council as well have done their part in commitments towards these sorts of things. The importance of ensuring that we have these financial education and financial awareness conversations in the South Africa we live in today.
Good question, Jimmy. So, you know, really becoming money smart actually starts with understanding our own financial position. Know what comes into our household, know what goes out, know what we owe, what are we saving towards, what are our financial commitments, because once we have that picture in mind, we can then start making decisions that impact our future lives and our current lives. But, you know, it's also about developing a habit of pausing before we make financial decisions. For example, before one takes out credit or buys a financial product or makes an investment decision, you have to ask yourself, do I understand what I'm agreeing to? Do I know what it will cost me? Do I know what the risks are? Do I know if it's appropriate for me in my current circumstances? Now, this is where Money Smart Week comes into play. Like I've mentioned, it's a collaborative platform. It allows for consumers to access information, to have educational opportunities from these organizations, which are made up of both public as well as private and community sectors. And it's really telling us, know your rights, know your responsibilities as a financial consumer. And then you touched on the Ombud Council now. Just know that when things go wrong with your financial institution, there's a financial ombud system that would be able to offer free, transparent, independent dispute resolution in the form of the phase ombud, the pension funds adjudicator, the national financial ombud scheme, and then there's a very niche ombud called the Johannesburg Stock Exchange ombud that would be able to assist consumers. But that's not all. You know, at this stage, we're living in a world where the cost of living is under pressure. We know that. We also know that consumers are generally having less room for financial mistakes. But the truth is, these financial mistakes do come about. So Money Smart Week South Africa is really telling us, using this collaborative platform, all these organizations and individuals, know the right questions to ask, not just about how I should manage my finances and how I should then be able to take out credit or make an investment decision. Ask questions. The first piece of advice I would always suggest is start with an understanding. Start with asking questions, not just about, you know, the fact that I'm going to be getting credit, or I'm purchasing a new TV on credit, or I've got an investment decision that has now going to take me into my future, knowing that I've got a little lottery ticket because I've made the right decision. We don't know that. And this is why Money Smart Week South Africa becomes so essential.
Avitha, before I let you go, I want to get a sense of what it is that we're looking to have attendees benefit from in terms of this particular initiative and this particular week. We know that there are goals that are set from the various organizers' perspectives, but if we are to look at it from the perspective of those that are looking to benefit from Money Smart Week as South Africans, what would you want for them to be able to benefit and take away from this event?
Another very, very good question, Jimmy, and thank you for that. I think don't assume that simply because you have a problem with a financial product or a financial service that you cannot do anything about it, because we see ourselves as the lowly consumer or financial customer against a conglomerate like a financial institution, so the David Goliath situation. Know that if you feel that you've been treated unfairly, raise a complaint with the financial institution. If that financial institution has not resolved a complaint that you have, or you remain aggrieved, take it through to a financial ombuds scheme. With the Money Smart Week South Africa organizations that are participating, individuals that are participating, the messaging is clear. We want to ensure that South Africa's citizenry is well equipped to make financial decisions. You know, it's not simple and easy to say that I've now got the credit that I wanted, or I borrowed something without considering the total repayment obligation. I need to be a FAE as a financial consumer or financial customer, that all the organizations that have come together to participate in Money Smart Week have your best interest at heart. If you as a financial customer are trusting the financial institutions, if you are confident in that, you will go back to your financial institutions. What does that mean? It means that you've got a well-greased economy, which is what you want. The financial institution wants you back as a financial customer. So at the risk of repeating, question, question, question. Don't accept everything as black and white. Obviously, that doesn't mean you mustn't read your terms and conditions and understand the obligations that are placed on you, but you also have reciprocal rights. Ensure that you know your rights.
Consumer education only works if we are able to share the right information with the right parties in that respect, and that is exactly why events like the Money Smart Week South Africa take place in South Africa, so that we can ensure that we keep our consumers abreast of everything that is happening. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Head of Regulation and Oversight at the Ombud Council, Avitha Norfolk, joining us to take a look at Money Smart Week 2026 and what matters so much about it.
We're not just interested in banking businesses. We're interested in building better ones. Because the true value of a bank isn't what it provides. It's what it makes possible. Simpler operations, greater adaptability, long-term resilience. Think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing, Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. In times of bullish markets, as David Shapiro mentioned earlier in the show, it is often difficult to find how it is that those markets will unfold from a day-to-day perspective, it is more important as a long-term investor to ensure how you, to make sure you navigate and manage your risk more effectively in those times. And we're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with Senior Institutional Clients Manager at Allan Gray, Jeff Chikudu. He joins me on the line to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Jeff, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. In times where markets are doing well, one would often think that there's very little risk in the market because the market's on the up. What are the risks that are out there when markets are doing this well?
Good evening, Jimmy. Thank you for having me on the show, and good evening to the listeners. It's a very good question, Jimmy. When we see markets performing strongly, we are often drawn in as investors at the very point when valuations are high and becoming more stretched, and investors are being motivated by the fear of missing out. They end up buying at prices that are higher than what we think it's the fair value or the intrinsic value of the asset. Also, we become more optimistic, expecting the good times to continue, and we become less and less cautious. And the danger is that when we overpay for an asset, that is a recipe for losing one's investment over time as markets correct. That is one risk that we at Allan Gray seek to avoid or to minimize by making sure that we try to always pay a price that's well below what we believe is the fair value of an asset.
Speaking of that fair value, Jeff, from a valuations perspective, we are finding ourselves in times where markets are looking to question whether these valuations can hold. The likes of Nvidia that are reporting numbers, their valuations definitely underpinned on that performance that we're expecting to see from a business perspective. Nvidia is a specific example that I use here because it sits in a very unique concentrated market of artificial intelligence, and concentration risk becomes portfolio risk at some point. How is it that we navigate that where very few options are available in the market, but perhaps investors still want exposure in that space?
So another good question, Jimmy. And when you look at market concentration, whether it be in South Africa or overseas, we are seeing those effects where valuations are quite high. And the biggest risk one must think about is how exposed are you to that? If we're talking about artificial intelligence, how well exposed are we to the likes of Nvidia? We understand that a lot of those companies are fighting for market dominance, and we do not know which one is going to win at the end of the day. And it's very similar picture what you see in South Africa, that we are seeing gold prices at unprecedented highs, and we don't know where they are going to settle. So the best thing to do is always to look for shares that are trading well below the fair value of that asset, and that will protect the client and make sure that you have a diversified portfolio. If I focus more on the SA market on gold prices, we believe that investors should do the homework and understand what is the value that they're paying for and what is being priced in. If the valuation is driven only by prices, as we have seen more recently, then one should always be more cautious, because these prices can come up and down. They do fall. We've seen that over the long history that Allan Gray has been managing exposure to commodity prices.
Jeff, before I let you go, those commodity prices at the moment are the subject of international factors and external factors. How is it that investors managing their own portfolios should be considering external factors as they potentially pose a bigger risk or a bigger threat to risk management?
Having a highly concentrated portfolio, if an investor tries to copy what is in the index, they will have that large exposure to commodities that we do not dictate what the price will be. They are dictated internationally by the markets. But the factors that have driven that over the last couple of years, what we believe was we've seen a lot more buying by central banks. We've seen also some other investors being attracted because they are scared of geopolitical uncertainty. Some of these factors can reverse quickly. And maybe as a point in, as an example, typically what we will see is that gold prices tend to rise during periods of high uncertainty or geopolitical conflicts. And what we saw from end of Feb until July, prices actually came down, despite the fact that there was a new conflict between Iran and the US. Maybe that was an indicator that investors who were paying over $1,000 an ounce were paying a substantial premium for having a safe haven asset. But from our perspective, we're not going to try and predict where the gold price is going to be in the future. What we ask investors to look at is to have a diversified portfolio and also to manage the risk that comes with that exposure by sizing that position adequately.
Managing risk is all about ensuring that you are able to make the necessary decisions at the time that those decisions need to be made, especially if you're looking at a long-term portfolio structure here. We'll have to leave the conversation on that note. Senior Institutional Clients Manager at Allan Gray, Jeff Chikudo, joining us to take a look at how it is that you manage risk when markets are on the up. The segment was brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. With over 5 decades of investing experience, Allan Gray remains focused on building long-term wealth for clients by pursuing long-term returns without taking undue risk. Allan Gray, more than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
Executive Lounge, where top leaders share their business insights and life lessons on SAFM.
It is Executive Lounge time, and this week's executive is a seasoned and decorated South African, not only having lived in South Africa, but having lived abroad as well. I'm joined in studio by board member of the International Women's Forum of South Africa, Me Busisiwe Memela Kambula, to take a look at her life and get to know her a little bit better. Me, lovely having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming all the way to studio to come and see us. What was it like growing up with 8 siblings?
Sure. It was an interesting time, particularly because as one who was in the middle, I had to bring up my younger siblings. I remember a time when I had to carry my youngest brother when we were going to school, who didn't have shoes at the time. So I had to put him on my back and take him to class and leaving him in the classroom. So it was an interesting time.
Some might not know this about you, but you actually spent more than 5 years in exile during the apartheid times. You came back to South Africa as a veteran, having lived outside the country at a very, very difficult time. How did you come back and make that transition into the boardroom and into the corporate space, so to speak?
I must say that I continue to be filled with gratitude for the fact that I had a privilege of being able to work in the underground movement, but also at the same time be able to go to school, which therefore meant that when I came back, I would be able to have an opportunity to begin to build a career. So when I first came back, I went and worked for the ANC for about a year. And then I thought, is this it? When everybody was preparing to go to government, I thought, is this what I need? Is this what I want? And I thought there's areas which I would like to learn and know about, and decided to go to corporate and went into banking. And at the time, it was a very interesting project that I went to, because it was in a space where the PAM Bank, which many of young people would not know, had lent money to our people. And many did not even understand what mortgage was all about. And many of the houses had been repossessed. So I started my banking career as a collector. So I had to go and visit Bogogo and say, Gogo, you haven't serviced your mortgage. What is it that we can do? Fortunately, at the time, we had a program where we could support people whose houses were repossessed and make sure that they can get their houses back. Because Ugogo would say to me, what? Talking about my house, you can take your 2-room and garage. You can take your 2-room at the back. This is my home. I'm not going to leave my home. So it was a very interesting space to be, but a very exciting time for the country at the time. So, yeah, we were building and we're all excited about building this new South Africa. And I think we're all excited about finding new solutions to the problems of the country.
Mebusi, looking at South Africa today, what would you say continues to be, we know some of our challenges, but what would you say continues to be some of our strengths? As someone who has seen the private sector, the public sector, we're now seeing this merge of public and private partnerships. We're seeing a coalition government that's finally found a way to work together. We're seeing a very different picture, I imagine, to how you remember growing up in South Africa. What would you say is South Africa's strong point at this point?
I think our strength as a country is our people. And what is exciting is that our leaders in the country understand what needs to be done. And the key is for us to work more with each other. I remember a time when we're focusing more on the public-private partnerships and we're making things different, just like the program that I spoke about where the banks together with government came together and say, how do we solve this problem? And I think if we can do more of that, we can be able to navigate some of the challenges that we have as a country. We can be able to make sure that our boys get jobs because they are the ones that are mostly affected. They are the ones that are standing in corners. And we can find solutions as a collective. Only if we work together and we understand that it's only together that we can build this country and create the better country that we were all fighting for, because we always argued that South Africa was going to be a different country from what we had experienced in other African countries. But I think we got into a bit of a rut, but we can get out of it.
Mebusi, are you reading anything at the moment? Is there anything that's got you hooked at and you can't just put down at the moment?
Actually, what I'm currently reading is a lot of books on coaching. There's a book that was written by one of the young coaches who is at GIPS, and the book is about coaching diaries. So she talks about her experience in terms of the clients that she's had in the past and what processes she put in place to be able to work with those clients. But the other interesting book that I continue to put next to me is the one which is the person that sold his Ferrari. I forget the title properly. But because it talks about one knowing oneself, because that's the challenge that many leaders actually have, is if you don't know who you are and whose you are, then it becomes a challenge because you can easily get lost in wherever it is, where either is it a corporate or is it government, where people are making demands that are unreasonable or wrong demands on you. So the key is knowing who you are and whose you are.
What would you say, before we run out of time, is your message to the youth of South Africa? We've wrapped up Youth Month. We're in the process of wrapping up Women's Month. There is a very clear need for a stronger next generation. As somebody that has been fundamental in helping shape the current South Africa that we find ourselves in, what would you say would be your message to the youth?
It would be, don't wait for anybody to create a chair for you. Pull the chair, even if whilst being in that chair, you will not get paid, because you will learn. Pull the chair and make sure that you are on the table. Having come to the table, make sure that you create your own space. But as you create your own space, you create your own space by making the table longer, by supporting others, whatever it is that you know, because we all have some kind of skill. You support others. And beyond supporting others, you make sure that you also can be a contributor in the economy, whichever way you can.
Contribute towards the economy. That is how we build the economy. It is a collective effort that we all need to be a part of. We'll have to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Mebusi Siwemela Kambula for joining us in studio for this week's Executive Lounge. It is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Hose and the SFM News team are standing by with the latest round of evening news. It also means that the Top Sport team will follow thereafter. And from my side, good night.